this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True, and I have a very special dream come true and a miracle in my life to share with you. The beloved, beautiful, precious, dear Sharon Callahan, and I'll give all your titles after I say just welcome to you, Sharon.
Oh, thank you so much, Iris, and thank you for the miracle that you are and for having this wonderful, uplifting program for everyone.
Oh, it is my extreme pleasure. It is my dream come true to do a radio show.
And it's a wonderful one.
It's really fun, too. So, Sharon, you are the creator of the Anna Flora Flower Essences for Animals. You are an internationally acclaimed animal communicator, the author of Healing Animals Naturally with Intuitive Listening and Flower Essences. Did
Very
I get
good.
It right?
That's good.
Or did I?
That's perfect.
Did I reverse it? And the creator of the Sacred Spirit Ministry, in which animals can come to church.
Yes. That's something that's been a dream of mine since I was a child. And when I was four or five years old, somewhere in there, my family was Catholic, and so we were going to Mass on Sunday, and all of the people were filing into the church, and there was a little cat with her kittens, and she was trying to get into the church with the human parishioners, and the little kittens were so tiny that she'd actually picked one of them up by the scruff of the neck, and she was trying to take it into the church, and the priest kicked her aside and shut the door. And it really just literally broke my heart. I just couldn't understand how it could be possible that all God's creatures weren't welcome in church. And it was kind of my first dark night of the soul as a little child. I didn't know what to do, but now I do.
Well, did you feel like he didn't truly work for God? That was my first thought.
He didn't truly work for God. He just seemed like a regular, not nice person to me. But now we know what to do, don't we? We just create churches where animals can come.
Yes, and we...
And for the most part, they don't need church. Because they're with God all the time, wherever they are.
Well, she was looking for something else. She was looking for a spiritual home. She was looking for someone to take her and her babies
home and nurture them and love them. That's right.
And get them home.
It's even a sad thing nowadays that so many of the churches now are locked, you know, at night after a certain hour. Because, I mean, in the old days, for people at least, I mean, we're just recently becoming more enlightened about animals, but in the old days, I mean, churches were always a place where people could go for refuge 24 hours a day, but now they lock them up. It just doesn't ever seem right to me. And you're right, that little cat was looking for refuge for her kittens and something to eat and a warm place to be.
And God to take care of her and
That's
her babies.
Right.
I almost can't go on. I just feel like crying. That is so sad to me.
Oh, I know. I feel the same thing whenever it comes into my awareness now. You know, 60-some years later, it still gets to me. And I'm sure in places, lots of places, it still happens.
Jen, I've been thinking more and more about animals since working with you, and they just give me so much and teach me so much. Not only my own kitties and bunnies, but all of them.
All of them.
all of them more and more. You know, like a dog will connect with me at the gas station and tell me to tell their person something. And I'm just so grateful for having learned to do this with your help.
And what did the dog tell you?
Oh, the dog told me, it was interesting. It was a real aggressive Rottweiler, and it barked to me, and it barked to me to come over there. Real gruffly in a Rottweiler way, you know.
Yes.
And I
they
obeyed.
They do have their personality, don't they?
Yes, and I went over there, and the lady started telling me that she had just gotten a divorce. She was really depressed. She was living in an apartment instead of the nice house she had been living in, and that she felt like she wanted to get the dog a new home because it wasn't fair to her to keep her in the apartment. And the dog said to me, if she gives me away, she will die. Don't let her give me away.
And did you tell the lady?
I didn't tell her she would die if she gave the dog away. I told her the dog, and the dog also said she would rather be with her and be stuck in the apartment than be with someone else and have a big yard.
Yes.
And I told her that part. And I don't know what the lady did with that. I never saw her again. I only saw her at the...
Well, my intuition is that she took your advice to heart and that she still has her dog with her.
Pardon me? I couldn't hear all of that.
I say that my intuition is that the woman really took your words to heart and that she still has her dog with her.
Well, you know, it's a chancy thing to just walk up to somebody at the gas station and say, your dog said.
It is, and even though I communicate with animals all the time, for many years I was really, you know, hesitant to say things to people in person on the street or in different situations. But I'm really not anymore because, you know, either people just brush you off as being crazy, or it really disarms them so much that they really listen and they really may get something from your courage to do that they wouldn't get in any other way. And more often than not, a person really does listen if you tell them that their dog is communicating something. And sometimes they're curious about, you know, well, how did you do that? How did you know what the dog was saying? So the more you do it, the more fun it actually becomes. I mean, there's always a person here or there that will reject it all or turn away or look at you like you're crazy. But I find, you know, 9 times out of 10, you can get into a real interesting conversation with people by beginning to tell them what their animals are thinking or saying. And it's interesting about that dog, too, because I've found with animals and with dogs in particular, because dogs are very devotional, they're very devoted to the people that they love, that in almost every situation, like the one you described, I have people call me all the time that are going through life changes or divorces, or they're moving across country, and they wonder if they should take the dog with them or find the dog another home. And in almost every case, the dog wants to be with the person, even if the person is going to be absolutely homeless for a period of time. Animals are just that loyal, so it's one of the great, great lessons we can learn from them. You know, they never turn their back on us or abandon us in the way we do them.
You know, I've been thinking of all the things that have been coming to my attention, where like the Fox Network in Richmond, Virginia, just went in and killed all of these feral cats that lived around the station. And
was this something recent?
Yes, and even though there were, and then they bulldozed the whole habitat.
Oh my gosh!
I can hardly talk about it. But then there was some other fish and game thing on San Andreas Island, one of those islands. If you know anybody knows what it is, correct me. To just kill all of these cats and then there were some wild horses that they were going to do that to on another island, and I don't understand what the thinking is that is a way to solve a problem.
Well, I don't either. I mean, it just, that's another one of those things that to me, from the time I was a child, I couldn't understand why people think that there are too many of some kind of animal, too many cats or too many of this or too many of that. I mean, it really is like playing God or thinking that the world doesn't know what it's doing or that the universal intelligence or the mighty I Am presence doesn't know what it's doing. And, I mean, I think there are people that would actually kill off other people if they could get away with it. And the only difference with animals is that there's usually no law against it unless they're on the endangered species list. But animals like dogs and cats and wild horses, I mean, they really are at the mercy of people who just decide somehow that whatever the human purpose is greater than the lives of the animals.
Well, see, I think that that's a whole loss of what the human purpose is.
It totally is.
It's complete, like, it's the same thing that allowed in when Katrina happened and attention was given to crowd control and looting instead of getting people out of there.
Exactly.
Instead of getting people out of hospitals. And
that's right.
Instead of just getting them out of the city.
Right.
And feeding people and nurturing people. And I feel like, you know, we were going to talk about how abusing animals is connected to poverty, actually.
Poverty and abundance, depending on how one looks at it.
Well, okay. Well, so I sort of want to set this aside for a little bit, but I feel like it's a root cause.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I just want to look at that. And it also has to do with people feeling they will have enough.
That's right.
Without taking somebody else's life or place or skin or eating them or...
And to a great extent, I feel it's it comes out of fear and ignorance. And I really don't believe that any individual person is bad or evil, but there's a whole collective, the collective consciousness of human beings contains so much programming, old programming in the way of, excuse me, fear and lack of abundance and feeling that in order to have abundance, you have to take things from other people or from animals. That it's this great collective burden in a way that many people still carry. And I think one of the important ways to deal with it is not to blame individuals, but to realize that it's that negative collective fear and greed that comes through the collective consciousness more strongly, possibly through different people than others. And I think in order to help, we have to embrace the animals, but also the people that are doing the harmful things in a field of love, so that no one's being blamed, but the whole collective consciousness is being uplifted into the remembrance of its I Am presence.
And, you know, Sharon, I have felt, and my information has been for a number of years, that the second coming is a certain amount of people on earth realizing they are the Christ.
Yes.
And walking the earth as the Christ.
Yes, I agree completely. And when you say that, it rings so true to me. I get really a literal surge of energy through my body. It's just, that's so absolutely true. And I think the good news is that we're actually getting very close to that number. That's the good news. And, you know, another big piece of that is that, to me, the animals are greatly responsible for getting us to that place collectively, where there are so many people that are realizing not only their own divinity, their own Christ presence, but also the Christ presence of the animals and of every living thing. And the animals do that so beautifully by opening our hearts, because so often people that abuse animals or abuse other people or do things that we consider violent or negative do so because they've been abused. You know, maybe they were abused by a parent when they were a child or in some way put upon. And so then as that person or those people grow up, they're often not able to open their heart to other people because they've been brutalized themselves. And often the thing that makes the difference is an animal. An animal comes into their life. And because the animal is so innocent and because the animal doesn't expect anything, only gives love, that allows the person to open up in a way that they couldn't in any other way. So to me, really, the animals are often the keepers of the door of our hearts, or the keepers of the door of the Christ presence.
Hmm.
And, of course, animals are, they're Christed already, and I'm sure there are people out there that would disagree with that, but from the time I was a child, I remember as a tiny little girl seeing holy cards and things. My father would travel, and he would bring me these little church cards of saints and things with halos around them. And I was always looking for people that had those halos, and I never saw any, except every once in a while around a pregnant woman or a child. But most often I saw those halos around the animals.
Hmm.
And to me that meant that the animals, and they were really already there. They were where we were trying to get. They were Christed already. They have so much to do, particularly in this time that we're in, with helping us to open that door to our hearts so that we can let the Christ light flow into us and out into the world.
Hmm. Wow, I'm trying to think. You know, I definitely see that one of those around treasure.
Yes. Maybe it's a little crooked sometimes. There's a little kink in it. A halo with a kink.
Oh, I see one around you, Sharon.
Oh, I see one around you.
No. Thank you.
I feel too, you know, one of the most powerful things, because for those of us that really love animals, it's really easy to become outraged at people who harm animals and to take a stand against those people or make them out to be an enemy. But one of the things that I've found that changes people the most, if they're unkind or violent or cruel, is to actually visualize that halo of divine light around them. And you can find, in many cases, without saying a word, if you see that halo of light or visualize it around a person, even the cruelest person, that the Christ presence in them will come forth as much as it's able to in that moment. And it's more effective than making them out to be the enemy. It doesn't mean that you don't step in and say no if they're doing something harmful to an animal or person, but at the same time really seeing that the Christ presence is within them, however deeply buried it might be.
Well, you know, that's what else the second coming is.
Yes.
We all come home to the Christ within.
That's right.
And that's what the source of all addiction is that people crave their connection with God.
That's right. I've always believed, I've actually worked with, I work with a lot of people as well as non-human animals, and I feel that all addictions are simply a misplaced spiritual impulse. You know, whether people are drinking or taking drugs or eating too much sugar, really what they're trying to do is to shift their consciousness so they feel better and so they feel closer to their own divine presence. You know, whether they realize they're doing it for that reason or not, that's the real truth of the matter there.
I've heard that the addiction to tobacco is the desire to breathe.
Yes, that makes absolute sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard that the addiction to alcohol is wanting a better life.
Yes.
Well,
yes, I could see that with my own father, who was alcoholic, that he was really a very good person, a very God-focused person, really, but he didn't feel close to God in some way, and so the alcoholism in some way helped him get to a place where he felt closer, even though it was a misplaced way to do it.
And the thing you say about seeing the halo around the person and knowing that the Christ is there in them, that helps more than anything else.
It does.
And sending them love. And then the other thing that's very much connected with that is I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right, the Ho'oponopono healing.
Ho'oponopono. I never know how many onos to put on it.
I don't either. I just sort of start to trip over my tongue. It sounds a little different every time. But it's just four easy steps. And what you're doing basically when you see something that is, say you see somebody being cruel to an animal, you're saying, I ask forgiveness for seeing that because I have a belief in it, therefore I was part of creating it. It
right.
couldn't be in front of my eyes if
right.
I didn't have a thought that that is true. And Ho'oponopono is called cleaning.
Yes.
So you're cleaning your own consciousness and you're cleaning the race consciousness.
That's right.
Or what people mostly believe. So the four steps are you see something you don't want, anything you don't want, anything that would normally outrage you or upset you greatly, and or that you just want to upgrade in your life,
mm-hmm.
and you just say, "I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you, and I love you." And the more you do that, the more you see that is really the truth.
Yes.
It is really the truth. We really do all love each other.
Yeah, it's very, very, very powerful. And I think it actually bears repeating for people the four steps.
Well, it really works
you.
And it really produces miracles. It's, I'm sorry.
Please
forgive me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you. And the way I get that is I'm asking people to forgive me for not seeing the halo in the first place.
Right.
For seeing this other shit about them and making that like it was something that was real. And that's the other part of the second coming is that, you know, we're all coming home to the Christ, and we can help each other.
And I think that it's, you know, the Ho'oponopono, the four steps, are so incredibly powerful, because ever since you brought them to my attention and gave me the book, we might tell people how to get that book.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been a wonderful tool in my life, and I've passed it on to many people. And I find a lot of people get hung up on the first two, the I'm sorry, please forgive me. But, you know, one of the most important things that we can do, particularly in regard to working with animals and the abuse of animals. I mean, animals really need for us to say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, to say that for the whole human race. And the more we say it, the more we really are clearing out the collective consciousness and bringing in the Christ presence. I mean, it's so, so powerful. I put it on a little card and keep it in several places where I can see it so I don't forget it during the day.
It's real important, and you can transform any condition with it.
You can. And isn't it amazing, Iris, how some of the most important and effective healing tools are so absolutely simple. I mean, childlike in their simplicity. And I think in many ways, that's another of the great blessings of the animals, is to get us back into a state of childlike simplicity and joy and an ability to say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and to say thank you, and to say I love you.
Yeah.
So important.
Becoming as a little child to enter into the kingdom of heaven.
It's exactly it. It's exactly it. And, you know, sometimes I walk into bookstores and things, and you look at all of these books with all of these people and all these fancy titles and a million words, and it just doesn't take all that much. It's as simple as these four steps. And if everybody did it, the whole world would change overnight.
Well, you know, let's tell the story of how this was applied and about the book, too. It's not how it was first applied, but it was how it was most dramatically brought to our attention, is that the book is Zero Limits by Joe Vitale. And he was and is a student of Dr. Hugh Lin, who is a psychiatrist, and he was assigned to this hospital for the criminally insane.
Right.
And the people were afraid to come to work there. A lot of the patients were dangerous. They were in shackles. It was a pretty ugly situation when he took over, and he just sat in his office, and with each one of their files, he read their files, and then he tuned into them and said, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And he did that over and over with everything that was in their files, all of the stuff that they had done. He asked their forgiveness.
Yes.
And just kept saying, I love you. Well, all of these patients got well and went home, and they closed down this mental facility, and now on that island, they have no criminally insane.
Isn't that amazing?
It is so amazing. And so I want to say, you know, just really use it. It seems like it's too easy.
All the good things seem like they're too easy.
And they, all the good things seem like they're too good to be true.
That's
huh?
right. And they're not. All the good things are real, real easy.
Well, one of the things that dogs have been telling me, Sharon, and I wanted to be sure and see what you get about this, is that they wish people would stop saying bad dog. And they wish people would say, good dog, and this is what I want you to do instead. Because a lot of times people say bad dog, and they don't know what is wanted. They only know what they did wrong.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Sometimes it just really breaks my heart when I'm walking down the street and I listen to the way people talk to their dogs or the way they kind of jerk them around on their leashes and things. And you're absolutely right. I mean, most of the dialogue between people and their dogs, at least out in public, is negative. It's always when the dog's doing something the person doesn't want. And, you know, I think to even take it a step further, I mean, it's wonderful to tell a dog that the dog is good and to compliment it when it does good things, and even just it's good because it's here on earth with us. But also I feel in my own work, I see like there's way too much emphasis on trying to train dogs to be like people or to, you know, behave like we want them to. And it's not that that's a bad thing, because there are certain things that dogs need to learn in order to be safe in the world, and we take them out. But in a way, we're really missing the boat, because if all we do is train dogs, then we're not really stepping into their world and learning what they can teach us. And so to take it even a step further, I think one of the most wonderful things people can do with their dogs is to really have a conversation with your dog and ask your dog, what can you teach me? What have you come into my life to teach me about? And you might be quite surprised at what you hear back. And then, of course, we have cats. So you can't train to do anything if they don't want to do it. It's not that they can't learn anything, but they can just blow us off.
They're here to train us, and they
definitely
know it.
Are.
Well, one time I did something wrong with my cat, and he said, "You have to remember your true relationship with us. You are the servants,
and you
can be replaced." I mean, he wasn't. You know, he wasn't giving me the dog loyalty there. It was like, shape up, or you can, you know. He was just joking, but
I think of cats as being very first rate, like their wisdom and power. And that's just another, you know, those are other qualities of God that are beautiful. And the dogs more, you know, there's exceptions to everything, but dogs generally do represent devotion, and devotion is beautiful and very much missing in our world. And I think it's real healthy for people who can to have both a cat and a dog, because they bring very distinct qualities, you know, as do other animals, like your rabbits, for instance. So for every different kind of animal you have in your environment, you have another wonderful, beautiful quality and wonderful wisdom that you can tap into, not only through the individual animal, but through the animal, through the whole collective consciousness of that species. It's quite magical.
I don't know if our rabbits would go for the dog thing.
Probably not. Well, maybe the right dog. It definitely would have to be the right dog. I do have clients that have dogs and rabbits together.
You do?
I do. That get along very well, but it takes a lot of intuition and talking to the animals ahead of time. I mean, this is another really interesting topic that we could easily spend a whole show on, but, you know, often when people have animals, companion animals, and then they bring another one home, the animals that are already in the household are absolutely in shock because nobody told them ahead of time that another one was coming. And so if you bring a second animal or a third animal into your home of existing animals, you always, if you can, want to have a conversation with the animals you already have about the newcomer so that it doesn't take them by surprise. Because in a way, it's one of the most common things that people call me for, is that they'll bring an animal home and say they bring home a new cat and they already have three or four cats, and the cats they already have are upset. And it's because they didn't know, they weren't prepared for the arrival of the new one. And in a way, it would be like, you know, if you were married and your husband suddenly showed up for dinner one night with another woman and said, well, she's going to live here with us now, you know, you'd be in shock too. And I think, you know,
I picture claws hissing.
Claws hissing, yes, and probably lots of shrieking, shredding of drapes.
And what? Shredding of the drapes?
Shredding of the drapes. Swinging from the chandeliers. More hissing. And one of the beautiful things I think you've done in your own life, Iris, is when you've brought another animal into your animal family, especially with the cats, you know, you prepared them and let them know that, you know, someone else is coming. And therefore, it's always worked nicely. It isn't that they don't go through an adjustment phase, but at least it isn't that shock of just having someone brought in and plunked down.
Yeah. Well, I would also never disrespect them.
I know you wouldn't.
I have enormous respect and love for all of them. And I just have enormous respect and love for animals to just have the courage to come to this planet.
Well, that's right. And a lot of animals tell me, I have people that call me who have animals that have recently died, and so we do after-death communications, which really is just as easy as communicating with a living being, because wherever the soul is, whether it's embodied or not, it's still available for communication. And I've had many animals that have crossed over tell me that there are millions of souls that want to come through to the earth, animal souls, that are terrified to come because they don't know what kind of situation they're going to be born into. And so you're absolutely right, Iris. I mean, just the decision on the part of the soul to come into the body of a dog or cat is an incredibly courageous act, you know, much less, you know, chickens or cows or the animals that are treated so horribly in factory farming and things. And they always come out of love. They sacrifice themselves. It goes back to Christ consciousness. They sacrifice themselves like Christ did to come to earth to teach us unconditional love, to help us to open our hearts.
You know, I know of a story of someone that he worked in a slaughterhouse, and he said, and he became a vegetarian.
That's wonderful.
And he quit his job and became a vegetarian, and he said, you know why? He said, the last thing, when you slit a pig's throat, it looks into your eyes.
Yes.
And he just... you know, the pigs gave him the love of becoming more of his God self. I can't explain it more than that.
That's right.
But, you know, I've always wondered what the world would be like if, you know, the most depressed people I've worked with were people that were doing something that was not life-affirming.
That's something, right.
Something that involved cruelty or... And this is back to the poverty thing.
Right.
And what I found there was survival consciousness. They would say to me, I'd say, well, why did you quit that stupid job?
Right.
And they'd say, well, because I have to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there isn't a job that would be fun and
you're talking about people that work in some kind of a career where they're having to harm animals.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I worked with somebody that was suicidally depressed, and she was depressed because she loved dogs and she was throwing them in the incinerator at animal control. That was her job.
And she thought she couldn't do something different?
Yes. But I felt like it was sort of she was doing it as a punishment to herself or
right.
something, because she felt so bad about herself.
Well, I think that's very often the case. Very often the case. That kind of goes back to the the halo of love effect around people. I think that, and I'm sure you do this automatically when you're working with people, you just surround them in this halo or tube of golden light, and then you work with whatever it is from there and help their Christ presence to come forward. And I think what you're talking about, too, you know, it can be a depressive agent in people's lives, even on a less dramatic level than, you know, working where they're euthanizing animals or something. But, you know, even thinking about, like, the wearing of leather or eating animal products or using cosmetics and things that are tested on animals, people that are really sensitive often don't realize how deeply those kinds of things impact them. Because if you're using a cosmetic, for instance, that has caused terrible suffering to animals, if you're sensitive, you really literally feel that vibration when you use that shampoo or that cream or whatever it is. And you may not know what the cause of your sensitivity or your depression is, but often when I work with people that are depressed or anxious or disturbed in some way, I can trace it back to something that they're using or doing that's causing harm to another being. And of course, that goes back to your topic of how treatment of animals relates to abundance. And really, the bottom line is we simply cannot have abundance or health or well-being through the suffering of other beings. It isn't necessary, and it creates the opposite thing of what we're after. If we're causing suffering to poor little rabbits because whatever we're using is being tested by being put in their eyes and making them blind, it's just impossible for that product to do us any good. It will do us harm rather than good. And so it all relates to abundance. And good treatment of animals brings tremendous abundance because the animals want us to live abundantly. They want to live abundantly. And if we treat them with great respect and love, and if we're careful about what we eat and the products that we use, I mean, the animals literally pay us back by bringing the greatest abundance to us. And I have another wonderful topic for a show sometime. I've had many, many, many clients over the years whose animals have helped them start businesses, literally giving them ideas for businesses that have become very successful. So it isn't just that animals help to open our heart or bring us abundance in a general sense, but sometimes as we become more able to hear their communications, they can give us incredible guidance on what to do and what direction to take our life that will not only do a great deal of good for the world, but will bring us great abundance too. I always like to, when I go out for a day, and particularly if I'm in a town or something that's new to me, I love to look at stores that have an animal, like bookstores that have a cat or a business that has a dog, because you can clearly see that those animals, they really are doing business. I mean, they're not just hanging out in the store. They're really drawing in customers and making the cash register ring. And, you know, they're working right alongside us in whatever capacity they can.
And they're just so much fun.
They are so much fun.
They are just so much fun.
It'd be pretty hard to be depressed holding a kitten or a little bunny rabbit, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Or a puppy.
It's an antidepressant with no side effects.
Yeah. And you know, what people need the very, very, very most is to pour out love
That's right.
It says that in the Course in Miracles, it says you are love, and your only need is to extend it.
That's right.
And so I think that depression comes, and poverty comes when we aren't extending it.
In a way, I think depression, and I can speak from experience because I went through a period in my life where I was very depressed. It's a kind of energetic constipation, you know, because we are love, and that love is in us, and it is in our heart, but somehow when we're depressed, it closes down that ability to let that love flow through us and out into the world. That's why very often people who are depressed or get better really quickly, if they just have someone to encourage them to be active in some way, because the minute you become active, the minute you look outside yourself or look to the animals or nature, then the door of your heart opens, the love begins to flow, and everything is fine.
And everything is fine.
Everything is fine.
I really want to encourage people to use that medicine and not antidepressants.
That's right.
Because those just close down the feelings.
They do. Makes things worse.
Oh. And everybody just wants to be alive so much.
That's right. Every creature.
Mm. So I want to encourage people to foster aliveness, to foster life.
Yeah.
To, you know, if a mother cat and her kittens walks in front of you, give them a home.
Give them a home, exactly.
There is a home for every animal.
Absolutely.
I have placed so many animals they weren't right for me to have, but they were right for someone. And all I did was do a little prayer. I'd say, God, I want this cat or this dog to have a home where it gets to go outside and inside, where it's free, where it's happy, where it's nurtured, where it's loved, where it's supported, and where it does a great service for the people, that they are happier because and have a more joyous life because they have this animal. And then I just put a singles ad in and say, you know.
That's the way to do it.
Beautiful young female spayed Persian seeks committed relationship
with
obedient human. What?
With lots of cuddling.
Yeah. Nose kisses accepted.
Nose kisses.
And it's amazing, the response.
It is amazing.
And I've just placed so many animals that way, and the people have called me over and over to thank me.
And I think another thing that's important for people to know that you and I have found out when we've gotten together and done work is that I think a lot of people stop because they have the idea of doing something like a singles ad, but they think, oh, it'll take too long. But you can sit down and you can do it in 5 minutes. And then you can put that in the paper or you can print off flyers. It doesn't take long at all, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, anybody that would like help with that, I can email them my sample copy so you can just...
wonderful idea.
Or you can call me. I would help with that.
That's a wonderful idea.
You know, I think it's important for everyone's well-being to make amends to animals every day, to
yeah.
do something for the animals every day. And I don't just mean for your own animal companion. I mean something for animals
every
day.
We can always do something for animals every day.
Pardon me?
We can always do something for animals every day.
And it's easy, and it might be as easy as signing a petition. It
That's
might
right.
be as easy as returning some cosmetics that you found out that they were tested on animals. It could be...
carrying dog biscuits in your pocket.
Yeah. Carrying dog biscuits in your pocket. How cute.
Saying good dog when you see a dog.
Yeah. Oh,
complimenting
I see
them
that.
On the wonderful job they're doing for their person.
Yeah.
I love to tell dogs that they're good.
Oh.
That's another thing about the good dog thing is that you can be such an example for the person by just doing it yourself. You know, when you see someone with a little dog, stop for a minute and just say, what a good dog you are.
Yeah.
What a wonderful job you're doing.
Yeah.
And then the dog feels better and the person begins to catch it too and they begin to use the good dog instead of the bad dog.
Yeah. And dogs want to please so much. They want to give us what we want.
They sure do. They would do anything to do what we want if we just made it clear to them. And like you were saying, keep it positive rather than negative.
Yeah, you are a good dog, and this is what I would like you to do instead of that. I would like you to poo here.
It's simple.
It is. It is. And I want to address that root cause that has allowed us to make looting more important than getting people out and being expedient being more important than being kind. And I call for healing for that, for all of us to just send healing to that right
Absolutely. Now.
And Sharon, we were going to do a little exercise where everybody looked at the animal they loved the most.
Oh, yes. I would encourage everybody every day who loves animals to look at their animal companion, or if you're not with your animal, if you're at work or something, think of the animal that you have or the animal in your life, even if it was back in your childhood, and think about all of the wonderful things that you loved about that animal, all of the wonderful qualities that were expressed through that being and the love that it brought forth from your heart, and then to send that out to all animals and all people everywhere, and to send that beam of love and light and appreciation out across the earth. That's another one of the simple things to do that would really change the world if everybody just remembers to take a minute every day to do it. It only takes a minute out of your day.
Well, let's do it right now. We have just less than 2 minutes. I want to do that and then tell people how they can reach you. So think of that animal you've loved the most in all the world ever. And now send that love out to all animals everywhere. Woohoo!
Ooh, that was very powerful.
That feels good, doesn't it?
It feels wonderful.
Tell people how they can reach you, Sharon.
I can be reached most easily by email through my website, which is www.annaflora.com. And you can go to the website and communicate with me directly from there.
And I want to assure you, Sharon does animal miracles beyond what you can imagine. And I just am so grateful for you, Sharon. Okay. And I want to ask you to come back soon and tell you thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody that's listening.
Yes, and to everyone everywhere, God bless you, and may all your dreams come true, and including the animals, and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Amen. Our women, our children, our animals, and yee-haw!